Welcome to the Brad and Body Podcast. You already know who we are. We wouldn't be here, so let's not waste any more time. Here's Bradley.
Well, hello, everyone. It's that time of the week again. It's the Brad and Body Podcast. And I keep saying to you guys that we've got some, and girls, we've got some fantastic guests. Well, Body and I have got a new segment now, and we're going to call it Where Are They Now? And for all our avid listeners, we have an amazing history in our sport. And today we are going to bring up another beauty. Body, first off, how are you, mate?
Extremely well, thank you. Very kind of you to inquire. It's made my day, made this whole podcast worthwhile, just the fact that you care. Are we going to mention who we're bringing in?
At least I pretend well, but anyway, it doesn't matter. So, right, let's start. This man is, well, first off, an amazing coach, an amazing person, but a better bloke. And he played, and I've got a minute here, so I'm going to set this up because it's quite long. He played from 86 to 96, and if not mistaken, the whole time was in Newcastle except 1 year, I believe, in Hobart was 91. He then turned to coach in 93, and he was an assistant to the Newcastle Falcons and then took over as the head coach of the Newcastle Falcons. I remember having many duels with him yelling at that small bloke, number five, the Kings, yelling out, running up and down the court. He then had a few years off, which we're going to talk about, went over to New Zealand, came back as an assistant with West Sydney, went to assistant New Zealand, assistant in Perth, but then really where I believe he was showed his true class, although he was a fabulous coach, but what he did in Townsville was outstanding. Unfortunately, in 2016, the Townsville Crocs, it was back then, ended, but this person completed the NBL in that year as the coach of the year, and now he is over in China. We, of course, talking of the New Zealand NBL coach 2014 and the new NBL coach in 2016. God, that was a long one. Sean Dennis, thanks for joining us, mate.
Well, mate, I obviously caught a little plane, and yeah. I'm actually in Japan.
Oh, yes. Japan, of course. Oh,
God. Yes, sure. Last week he thought Launceston was up the road from Hobart. Okay, I don't know if you heard that. Yeah.
Is that anywhere near Sydney?
Yeah. So don't be surprised he's confused Japan and China. Jeez. So how did that come about, Sean, that you went to Japan? I mean, obviously Townsville Crocodiles folded, or the league folded them up, one or the other. But so there were opportunities, I'm sure, for you in Australia. I mean, you're very highly regarded. How did Japan come about?
Well, interestingly, there wasn't anything in Australia. I didn't know what I was going to do. And my good friend Rob Beveridge had done a review of the Japanese situation, and basically in Japan, when Japan got the Olympics, just like when England got the Olympics, FIBA decided that their national team wasn't good enough to actually compete in the Olympics. So they did a complete review of the situation in Japan and Japan basketball. And at that time they had two leagues, the BJ League and the NBL. And they decided they needed to streamline it all. They needed to get coach education. And now we have what's called the B League, and there's three divisions in the B League. And I'm assuming the B League stands for Basketball League. I'm not too sure. But we have a lot of agents say to me, is that the B League? Is that the actual top league? No,
shouldn't it be the A League? Yeah.
Not A League. Yeah. So anyway, through that process, Bevo was offered an opportunity to come over and do what they call the S license clinic, which every coach has to have a license here to coach. And he couldn't do it. He had other commitments. So he put my name forward because, as you said, the Crocs had just shut the doors, which was a real shame. Interesting that Perth have picked up all those guys and now win the championship. So what would it be? Right?
Yes.
And so I came over and did that. And my old coach and mentor, Tom Wisman, was coaching Tochigi Brex, who are now Utsunomiya Brex. And I guess I did a pretty good job at the clinic. And his assistant coach, who's now the head coach at Utsunomiya, was at that clinic. And another guy, Luka, gosh, I can never say his last name, Serbian coach, is also now coaching here, was part of that at the start as well. And within 48 hours of getting back home from doing the clinic, Tom rang me and said, look, I might have a job for you. Are you interested? And I said, absolutely, because I've got nothing else to do.
Yep.
And, that night I got a contract sent through to me. I signed off at about 3 a.m. in the morning, and Basically went to sleep for a couple of hours, got up and caught an airplane to Indonesia to do a camp with Vlahov that he does every year, and chain probing and the likes, and came back. I was back home for a day and heading to Japan, and been here ever since, and this year was my fifth year.
Wow, what a...
Yeah, so that's an amazing... So unless I don't know something that you're about to tell me, I didn't figure you could speak Japanese. So how does that go? How does that go coaching a Japanese team?
It's my interpreter is basically attached to my hip like my Siamese twin.
Right.
And, you know, it's everywhere I go. I mean, the good thing about basketball world is a lot of the terminology is global, so you get away with that. It's more when you get into the long-winded conversations. The most important thing I learned, though, was namabiru, which just means I'll have two beers, thanks.
Oh, okay. I thought it would have meant, ref, what are you doing? But no, fair enough, I'll have two beers.
No, that's a dot there. Why? But, you know, and we put together what we called in my team, Shiga Lake Stars, we put together a dictionary we call Shiga Speak. And so it's common terminology. And I remember hearing Gorgian talk about this when he was in China, that they came up with common terms for everybody that you could use and use on the court. So we've tried to do that as best we can, so that when I do bark something, or the players talk to each other and there's the language barrier, you can use some of that common terminology. But I tell you, you can't have, you know, you guys, I hear you guys talk about it all the time, about the powwows the coaches have before a timeout. Yeah. I can't have them because I don't have time. By the time I talk and it gets interpreted, I'm lucky to get 20 seconds. So there's very few powwows because you just run it. And being Japan now, you cannot dawdle out of a timeout without just tech value. So once they blow the whistle, you're getting out of there, or they get quite stroppy.
Wow. All I remember is whenever there was timeouts, Roger Shields would come in and blow his whistle, so you became deaf. So it didn't really matter. So it's either deaf or tech foul. I'm not sure. He used to blow that whistle so hard in there. I want to go back, and I'm sorry. I did know you're in Japan. I had no idea why I said China. But anyway, I want to go back to when you started out in coaching. What was the transition like as a player to a coach, and how did that come about? Was it Tom? Is that where it started?
It started with Tom. It was around... the end of 92, you know, my knees had gone from one of the quicker guys in the league, I think, to the slowest lateral mover that the world had ever seen. You know, and I knew my career, it was getting really difficult every off-season, you know, just trying to stay on the court and the extra work you had to do. And really with the way my role diminished as well, you started to go, well, you know, is all this work on the court really worth it? I mean, I loved what I did, so that kept me going for the extra couple of years. So I went to Tom and I said, look, I want to get into coaching. I'd always loved coaching. I'd coached ever since I was about 14 or 15. I always coached kids or a couple of age groups down, you know, like growing up in country Victoria, Swan Hill and Wangaratta. You know, you're in the under 16 representative team, so you coach the under 12 and things like that. And I'd always loved coaching. And I even remember back when I was a kid playing cricket and I was captain of my under 16 team, you know, I didn't like the way we're doing things. So I came up with drills to teach us all how to catch and things like that. It's just something I loved doing. And so I went to Tom and said, you know, I want to get involved in this and John Horsell was the owner of the Falcons at the time. Right. And he really liked me and said, okay, let's do this. So we created a role. So in the last 3 years as a player, I was the video coordinator, which used to take me hours, not like these days where you've got all the software. It was two, you know, VCRs on top of each other, fast forward, rewind. I was our elite development coach of our young, you know, players that I identified. I was our development officer, so I had to go out to the schools and do all of that. And then I had to find time to train as well. And so I get quite annoyed at some of these guys who think they can just go into coaching. And people don't realise the hours that I was working through those last 3 years of my playing career. There's nothing for me to go to bed at 3 or 4 in the morning and then have to be in the office by 8:30 to show Tom the video, to show the team. And, you know, and that was difficult too. I'd always try and sneak in my mistakes. So the players didn't think I was picking on them too much. Michael Johnson used to get a bit grumpy at me sometimes because he'd come up on TV and just And you always got some good ones of Paul Kuiper doing something stupid, so that was always a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I love hearing all those names. It's fabulous.
Yeah. I didn't know you, Swan Hill and Wangaroo. I sort of pictured you as a Newcastle, another Castrian born and bred sort of thing.
Everyone thinks I'm from Newcastle. No, Wayne Larkins and I were two kids from Swan Hill, went to school together, played representative basketball. He was far better than I was at that age. And then my mother remarried and we moved to Wangaratta. And Wangaratta is where I really started to play Australian rules football. And I made my senior debut with Wangaratta Rovers as a 17-year-old. And I actually didn't really play much basketball for 2 years. I went down to North Melbourne under Dennis Pagan, was the under-19s coach, and was down in North Melbourne for a bit. And then I quit football because basketball was my love. And so I went back to basketball, and that's when I played with Aubrey Wodonga. And here's the funny story. We went up and played Newcastle. I'm playing with the Border Bandits, as they're called. And I went to Cal Bruton's camp, and I'm in his book, Palming the Ball, in the middle of the book. And Cal Bruton loved the Iceman, and he called me the Iceman. So George Gervin became my favourite player. And we get to Newcastle, and they've got this guy by the name of Greg Ireland, and his nickname was the Iceman. And I went, you know, bloody BS, he's the Iceman. I'm going to show him. I went out and had 38. Scored 38 points, and that's how I got to Newcastle. The president, Cole Stevenson, was at that game. It was a game against the Hunters. And he's like, who's this kid? I was, 19 years old, I think. And they started to follow me. And out of the blue, he contacted me. We played Sutherland. We came back up and played Sutherland. And they said they were interested in me. I got a phone call one night. And this annoys me about some of the kids today when you recruit them. I get a phone call on a Wednesday. It's the school holidays. I've just gone back to school and finished HSC. And they said, can you be in Newcastle on Friday? Yes. No money was given, no nothing. I jumped on the train.
Opportunity.
Got to Newcastle, left Wangaratta, I think, at something like 6 a.m. in the morning. Got to Newcastle at 11 p.m. Friday night. Saturday morning under Bob McGugan, I was on the court at 8 a.m.
No private jet?
Private jet.
Yeah. Who was the coach at that time, Sean?
It was a private railway seat, yeah.
But who was your first coach there at Newcastle?
It was actually, may he rest in peace, South Australian,
Steve Johansson. Steve Johansson.
Yes.
And can I just ask?
Owen Wells, and then Kenny Cole.
Owen Wells, yeah, I remember that. They were great.
Then I came back under Tom Wiseman.
Can I ask a quick question? Iceman, did you play with Jerry Everett?
Yes.
He was called Ice.
Yes. Now, I'm going to tell you, I'm sorry. We were sitting in a meeting with Steve Johansson, pre-season meeting, and Steve Johansson said to Jerry, what did your coach do at college when you weren't doing the right thing? He said, I got kicked out of practice all the time. And I thought, why do we even have this guy here?
Yeah.
You know, and you know, Jerry was an amazing talent.
Yeah, wow.
He could make you look like the best passer in the world. You just had to throw it near the rim when he first arrived. He's absolutely crazy. But, you know, he was all over the place. You know, he wasn't a highly dedicated guy. But boy, oh boy, when you riled him, his matchups with Al Green were they were amazing. You know, two trash talking guys, you know, wanting to fight each other, and it was amazing. You know,
I'm not sure if a lot of people are aware of this, but after he finished with Newcastle, he actually came down and played ABA at the Sydney Comets, and I was in that team for my rookie season. And we actually played in the ABA finals. Now, in that team was Mark Ridlin as well, a former Sydney Kings player. And our coach was Cliff Martin, that you guys would have known and played against. And we went down to Melbourne and we beat Bulleen on the Friday night, or whatever. That was coached by Brett Brown. And then we ended up winning the ABA. But I remember a few years later, he's still playing, and we went out. We played Newcastle, right? And he hit 15 of 16 threes.
That's not a surprise.
And at the three-quarter time break, he comes out and he looks at all the kids and goes, I own you. I used to train you. I own you. I own you. And it was just hilarious. And just hearing you say the smack talk that he talks, that was so Jerry.
Yeah, it was. I remember in one game, we're playing I'm not sure whether they Southern Saints or what West Side Melbourne, whatever they were called.
Yep.
And the backcourt was Brendan Joyce and Wayne Largan. So two absolute bull terriers. And at one stage, Jerry's just pointing at them both going, I'm kicking your ass, I'm kicking your ass. And I'll fight you both. And Choco's throwing punches at him. And
Moving on to you did a season at the Wollongong Hawks. Was that with Chock?
That was with Chock, yeah.
Yeah, right. So that was in 99, 2000. Where'd that come about?
It well, Newcastle went bankrupt again, for the first time. And I was going to lose my job anyway. You know, we'd gotten off to a good start and then things went belly up. And so Dave Claxton was going back to the Gold Coast, I believe, who was Choco's assistant. So Choco rang me and said, oh, you know, would you be interested? Of course. So I went and met, and we had a year there and loved it, you know. And it was a tough situation. They decided to make some financial cuts, and Cookie was having some pretty serious knee issues, and they still had a year to run his contract. So unfortunately, last man in, first man out. Poor old Chuck, I'll never forget, you know, him sitting in the office when he had to tell me, you know, you could see the pain, you know, tears in his eyes, and so sorry, you know, we're going to have to let you go.
That's the mad side of coaching, isn't it? A lot of people don't see that.
No, you know, and you know, Chuck, for all his hardness and that, he really is a loyal person and loyal to those that he really cares about. And that was really tough for him. And so I went back to Newcastle, and unfortunately they went on and won the championship. But, you know, I was lucky enough to be in the stadium the night that Harry hit those shots. You know,
oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I was there too. It was a bad night all round.
It was really cool, my wife and I at the time. And so that was pretty cool.
Darnell Mee was there as well, wasn't he, buddy?
Yeah, he was. You know, that whole incident where I was sitting on the press table, that took place about 2 metres away from me. It was like I was right in front of me, and I just hung my head because I thought, well, there's no way that's.
I don't know if you get to watch the games now, Sean, but they actually had a game recently, and they replayed the whole thing again. It was brilliant.
It was. Now, I try and watch as many NBL games as I can. It's pretty cool. You know, being able to have NBL TV is great. So,
yeah.
You know, I watch, there's not too many games I don't watch. You know, I've really loved watching the league over the last couple of years. And in particular, watching those kids that we had in town who had airball gone on and just evolved is something really special. It's a really good feeling.
Yeah, they're flourishing. I mean, Nick Kay obviously was the first one that really flourished and has gone on a bigger and better. But, Blanchfield, Stondall, it is interesting, isn't it, Sean, is what might have been if the league hadn't been in such a bloody mad hurry to close up the doors at Townsville.
Yeah. Well, you know, rightly so. I don't know that you can have two teams in North Queensland, unfortunately. I think that's too many. Right. You know, it's not a big enough area. And with the financial climate of today, I just don't know there's the financial support to do that. And the Cowboys just take so much. And you know, that's just the way it is. It's a rugby league town, and that's just the way it is. So
it's an interesting concept, isn't it? Because they also probably had the, what, ninth or tenth immortal at Townsville there, and that's when you've got, you know, like Jonathan Thurston. He just takes up everything, doesn't he? Do you still keep in contact with those players?
As much as I can, You know, I reached out to them all, kept a great relationship. It was really cool to go to Clint Steindl's wedding in Hawaii a few years ago. You know, Paddy Mills was there and Mitch Norton was there, so that was great. And Nick reaches out, you know. I'd love nothing more, actually, than to try and recruit Nick to Japan. So I've got to be doing it heavily.
Is there good money in Japan?
Great money in Japan.
Right.
Great money in Japan. You know, it's the caliber of import here is very high. This is like DJ's doing a great job. He's carrying his team. We actually played him on the weekend, Osaka and Split, which was good for our team. We were decimated by COVID. I lost 9 players out of my team.
Wow.
You know, we've done a similar thing at Shiga. What we've done in Towers, we'll put together a good young group. And last year we're starting to show that signs of that. And then COVID came and my club really slashed the budget and we lost 9 players all up. It was unbelievable.
How are you going with COVID right now? Like, are you allowed crowds at games? Or like, what's the situation in Japan?
been another spike. So this we played on the weekend with no crowds in Osaka because it's gotten really bad in Osaka. Most of the crowds have been allowed 50% capacity throughout the season, which has been pretty good. But there's been a real spike over the last month, and there's been a number of games cancelled and teams. So it's threw the league into a bit of disarray, but we've been able to get through it. We have one game left on Wednesday, and then we're finished. And there's a few more games to make up, and then the playoffs start in just over a week.
What's your gut feeling about the Tokyo Olympics? Do you think it's going to happen?
It'll happen. It just quite likely maybe no crowds, but it will definitely go ahead. There's just no way from a financial point of view. It would destroy some economies if they don't do it.
That's the feeling I get.
They'll definitely. Unless some new strain comes out that's just so deadly they can't do it. It'll go. As I can see, and I think they're planning on what I'm led to believe, I don't know for sure, is that they're basically you're going to come in, do your event, and then you're gone. So there's no ceremonies, there's none of that. It's do your event, then you're out type situation. I think that's what they're going to do.
All right, I've got a hypothetical question for you. A coach gets fired in the next couple of weeks. They ring Sean Dennis and they say, mate, get out of Japan. We want you back here and we'll sign you to a 3-year deal. What's going on? What are your plans? And would you consider coming back to Australia because you're sorely missed?
Look, I would never say no to coming back to Australia, but unfortunately, I've actually just agreed to a new 3-year contract with a new team, and I can't say who just yet, but I will be on the move. It should come out shortly. So right now, I'd have to say no. I've got a great opportunity about to start here, and it's one of those jobs that you dream about as a coach. So came from nowhere. I was almost about to re-sign with Shiga, and out of nowhere came this opportunity, and I couldn't say no to it. So right now I'd have to say no.
So it's not at the club that signed Andre Lemanis?
No, it's not at the club that signed Andre, but I didn't tell you.
Well, we've had it out there for a while that he's going,
no one else has picked up on it.
I asked somebody who would be fairly connected, and all they said was, I cannot either confirm or deny that he will be going.
Okay. All right. I got one for you. Back from your playing days, you were talking about Icemen. I mean, we have an Iceman in South Australia named Darryl Pearce.
And he had his 50-point or whatever it was on me.
That's when you had bad knees.
Unfortunately, I wish I could say that, Brad, but it wasn't.
It was around 86, 87. Yeah. You're at your prime. But there was Darryl and there was Al Green with the 36ers. So, like, you couldn't get an easy assignment, could you? This is like, who's the toughest? Because on their day, both of them were awesome.
Well, look, they're both different. You know, like Al didn't get the name Mean Al Green for no reason. You know? and he talked all that trash, and then he'd elbow you in the middle of the face, and Jeff Weeks would call a foul on you for hitting your nose on his elbow.
Yeah, fair enough. Obviously, you're in Adelaide. Yeah.
Why is it there?
So, you know, you had to deal with that unbelievable, almost inhuman strength that he had and athleticism. And that was tough. And then, you know, he'd be telling you how he's going to fight you after the game if you score and all this stuff. And you know, and then you go on to Darryl and you wouldn't hear a peep during the game. But the funniest guy off it, you know.
Yeah, yes.
And Darryl was... You know, you had to have the rule. If you couldn't touch the ball, you weren't close enough. You know, his ability. The thing I loved about Darryl Pearce was he was like Kirk Penny. They could set their feet so quickly and have that ball into the set point and gone before you were, you know, and you thought you were playing good defense. And the other one I loved about Darryl is he can put the ball above his head and fake a pass and then shoot the three.
And
once he got rolling and got those feet set, oh my gosh, it was pretty special.
Can I ask you, because I love hearing that, when you talk about they're knockdown shooters, right? That's what we talk about in our sport.
Yeah.
Are there players now that you look at when you – and you've coached a lot of them as well – that you go then look back and say, man, those guys didn't get their due course that they should get now?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Darryl Pearce was as good a shooter as anyone in today's game.
Wow.
Yeah, got to agree. Got to agree.
Yep. What about Michael Johnson?
Michael Johnson is the greatest shooter to never have played in a pinnacle event for Australia. I don't know why he did it. I don't know the ins and outs enough of it. You know, Michael was a difficult teammate at times. There's no doubt about that. Now, whether that went against him, I don't know. But you're talking about a guy that was 6'6". I saw him dunk on Dave Colbert at the old Albert Park Stadium one day. That was unbelievable. You know, and I remember we're playing the old Kmart Classic, and Brisbane had just bought
him. Oh, love that. Yeah.
Brisbane had just bought in Winston Cry.
Unbelievable
athlete. And we're sitting watching a game because we've got Brisbane next. And this guy breaks out on a fast break and goes to lay it up. And Cry comes over the top from behind and just throws it into the fifth row somewhere. And Michael goes to me, you know, if I'm in that situation, I just do a quick dunk. And lo and behold, he gets in that situation and goes, bang, does a quick dunk. And you can see Winston quite go, how the hell does this white boy do that? You know? But that was Michael. Michael was unbelievable. And the most, we were at practice one day and Ken Cole goes to him. Michael's standing a step or two inside of halfway, about to start practice. And he says to Ken, hey, if I make this shot, can we go home? And Ken goes, yeah, but you've got to shoot it from there. Michael turns and shoots a jump shot, swish. Okay,
go home.
Yeah, Ken, got to let you go home. But it was effortless. Now, this guy was skinny, but it was effortless. He's the most beautiful jump shot. Him and Darryl Pearce, in my mind, like Andrew Gaze was a good shooter, but not a great shooter. He was a great scorer. Great scorer. And best scorer Australia's ever produced, in my opinion. Nobody's come close as far as that I know, right? There might have been some back in the 70s. I never saw Eddie Palavinskas, so I don't know. I can't comment on Eddie. But in my time, Darryl Pearce and Michael Johnson were by far the two purest shooters I ever saw and would still be good in today's game.
Wow. Do you think perhaps, Sean, that Michael's chances to represent Australia might have been impaired by the fact that he was around the same era as Ian Davies, who a lot of what you've said, you could sort of describe Davies in much the same way?
Yeah, and even like and Ian was an amazing shooter too, but Ian was really streaky. Like, you know, Ian could just go 0-10 and then go 10-10. But I felt like Darryl and Michael just had pure jump shots, just like picture perfect. Like you're doing a textbook on how to shoot a jump shot, you pick those two guys. And you know, and I do agree with you about Ian, because, you know, can you carry two guys who didn't really pay a lot of attention down, though, like Bill Murray. Like Bill Murray on Space Jam. I don't do that.
Sean, one of the things we do is we like to ask you, in this instance, for a one word, one line, one sort of sentence thing of a certain player. And we're going to go a couple each here for Boddy and I. So I'm going to start. And the first one I'm going to bring out, you've mentioned his name already, Rob Beveridge.
A great mate, like just the most loyal coach to his players.
Good answer.
Okay. Uday Barber.
Fastest man on the planet up the floor. Unbelievable speed up the floor in transition. And I saw it here 3 years ago when he made his, 3 or 4 years ago when he made his debut. Just speed.
So
everything is speed.
Right. Before we go on with a couple more names, what's his impact been? The fact that he's been playing in Australia for Melbourne United, has that had any impact in Japan for United or the league?
It's having an impact. I'd like to see I think we could do it a bit more, but it's definitely having an impact, because if I've retweeted a couple of things and it gets a lot of likes, and I think there's real potential to grow that. And I'd love to see the B-League here open up their games to outside of the country. Right now you can't watch them unless you've got a VPN and you can make out like you're in Japan. So it would be a great relationship to build on, because I think there's great potential there.
Good one. Next one, Clint Steindl.
What's the best word to have? Thank you. He, mate, game breaker. I watched him so many times just go bang, bang, bang. And absolute game breaker with that jump shot.
Beautiful.
Todd Blanchfield.
Vinny. He's just Vinny. He's just Vinny to all of us. No, look, Toddy, underrated. It's great to see Perth utilising his talents.
Yeah, isn't it?
I agree. Don't feel everywhere else he's been has utilised those talents, and they, and, you know, and so I think he's underrated. I don't think people realise how good he actually is.
I think that's a great point, because I thought when he left Townsville and ended up in Melbourne, he just sat in the corners there and did nothing, literally. And that's not his fault.
He went 1 year too early.
Yeah, I agree. Now, I'm going to throw one right left field here, because what a lot of people don't realise is what certain people have to give up to be able to do what they do. So I'm talking of your better half. So I want you to give me a sentence of Lainey Dennis.
Of Lainey? Resilient. Let me tell you a story, right? We went on our first date in Perth. And I didn't even own a car. She had to pick me up rather than the other way around. She was the operations manager for the West Coast Waves at the time. And that was how we met. And I was living with Dave Herbert, who was coaching the West Coast Waves. And so anyway, I find out that she's attracted to me, blah, blah, blah. Okay.
She's only human. She's only human.
I gather up the courage. And anyway, so we go to the Boulevard Hotel in Floreat near Bendat Centre where we trained and where our offices were. And we sit down. I looked her right in the eye and I said, look, I don't know about you, but I'm crapping myself here. And and then I said to her, I'm going to put it on the table. I'm a basketball coach. I don't know where we're going. I said, but we can be living in one town one day and gone the next. And by gosh, to the word, it's happened four times in our 10 years together. So she's extremely resilient.
Great answer. Great answer.
I only had one more, and that was, and you mentioned him a couple of times. I'm just curious as to how much influence he's had on you, and that's Tom Wiseman.
Mentor, full stop.
Right.
Tom is still the most amazing coach I've ever had at watching a game and coming up with a game plan to give you an opportunity to win. And he, and I thought one of the reasons I've been able to take some of these low budget teams that I've had over times and be competitive is because of how he taught me how to read a game and come up with a game plan that would disrupt the opposition and give you a chance when you don't have talent.
Yeah, great answer. Look, I'm I have to say this unfortunately every time this way, because we could talk for hours and this is brilliant. But I think I've looked back and I've learned a lot more about you, and I can realize now how much you're missed in this country. And I know whenever people talk about coaches that aren't in this league, you're one of the first that are mentioned. So first off, for on behalf of Boddy and I say thank you so much for coming on. Congratulations on your new 3-year deal, wherever that may be. And look,
not in China. It's not in China, I'll tell you.
Let's hope it's in Japan. Let's hope it's in Japan. And let's and again, thank you so much. You're an amazing coach, but a better guy. And we thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for coming on.
Thanks a lot. All right, guys. Cheers.
Well, that was fantastic, and we want to thank Sean Dennis. And just by the way, all our viewers, that was or listeners, I should say, that was all the way from Tokyo, not China, all the way from Tokyo.
Not Beijing.
That was Sean. So he got on the line and did that all the way from there. So that was great. What a great story, and we're going to try. Wasn't that great, Boddy?
Yeah, look, I love people of Sean's ilk and Sean in particular, but there's a lot from that era that played and then coached, and they've got good stories to tell. I mean, I just thought of him as totally as a Nova Custrian, and I had no idea that he was from Swanepoel via Wangaratta. You know, that stuff is
for really all our listeners, and I got to say, you know, I had fun about. We had three listeners, everything. A huge thanks to Piranha Media, the global, or should say the reach that we're getting now is unbelievable. The figures that Boddy and I are blowing away. Two people that just wanted to have a pod and talk like we're sitting on a couch, and next thing you know, we're getting unbelievable viewings, and it's just been great. So Piranha Media, thank you so much. Got some amazing thing, but to have that on, and we want to try now bring back to our listeners, and we're going to be, you know, where are they now? We won't do that every week because we want to bring on people from the current era, and we're going to talk about people from the old era as well. So so fantastic. So let's move on to the NBL body.
Let's start it off with your Rose and Rattler, because we haven't got a lot of time. So we're in the middle of a round still, so let's
Let's go. People know what's going on with scores. My Rose and Rattler this week is the Southeast Melbourne Phoenix. Now, I am a fan of them, but they did lose to Brisbane. And to be kudos to Brisbane, they played well. But the problem that I've got, and I'm not going to name names because I don't want to put it into people, but when you've got four players that are shooting 53 shots between them, and those four players is not Creek and Glidden, I have a problem with this because that ball is not getting into the right people's hands. Creek can carry this team. He's that good. Now, 53 shots from four players, that's of an average of just over 13 shots. Creek took six shots in that game, Boddy, 34 minutes. Now, Brokoff went off injured, and we saw that. That was a bad hit, and I actually felt for Sobey there because that was a complete accident, but it was a bad hit. But he played 7 minutes and took four shots. But Creek getting six shots in 33 minutes, mate, that is not going to get this team into the top four.
No, it absolutely is not. And I think there's a few people in that team that may have too much license, too much of a green light to just jack it up when they feel like it. And I don't think it's doing them any favors. I think they've lost, three in a row now? They're skidding a little bit. And you know, Brisbane, Adelaide, New Zealand, I know we realistically don't think they're going to make it, but they're still capable of causing a bunch of upsets along the road. So nothing's – no.
Okay. What's yours, mate? Come on.
My Nodge Nasty is actually I'm thrilled to bits by the fact that Josh Giddey, after he got his second triple-double and became the first Australian to get two and first teenager and all those wonderful historical ticks that he's got, and when he was interviewed about it post-game and also in the press conference when it came up, he said it was way more important to him that Adelaide 36ers had got the W. And I thought, hallelujah. For all the noise that the media or the NBL media or the so-called basketball journalists are screaming at us through the TV about, oh, he's triple-double, he has got it right. It's way more important that they got the win, okay? He said his first triple-double was disappointing because they lost the ball game. But this one here, it was okay because the important thing was winning the game. And that speaks very highly to me of what Josh Giddey, how he sees the game and how he understands the game. Kudos.
Oh, yeah, I'm not surprised when you've got a dad like you have with that background. But I'm going to ask you a question. Do you think he should be in the Boomers team or make himself available for the Boomers team?
I'm sure he'll make himself available. But if you're talking the Boomers team for Tokyo later this year, then I think he has to be selected on merit alone. I've been reading this stuff. Some of our so-called basketball celebrities and identities are churning stuff out about, oh, he needs to be blooded. He needs to be given the opportunity to experience the whole thing. I think if you're taking him on that basis, don't. Because there's no such thing as blooding in Olympics. We're going to that Olympics to try and win a gold medal is what they're saying, or even a silver or bronze. Don't care. They're going to win a medal. So you pick the best possible team to win that medal. Now, you don't put someone in because, oh, we want to blood this kid or we want to blood that kid. You use a World Cup for that or you use an Asia Cup for that. But for an Olympics where you want to win a medal, you pick your best team. Now, if you think he's in the best 12, take him. But if he's not in the best 12, well, for God's sake, you don't take him to blooding. That's a load of nonsense. They're not even going to get to walk at the Olympics. What blooding is he going to do? Listening to timeouts, warming up? You know, like that's a nonsense to me.
So I'm going to agree with you about the fact that he shouldn't be playing in the team because I don't think he'll make it, right? And that's no disrespect to him, just the caliber of people in front of him. But what I would say, he is just a kid, right? And he's 18 years of age and he's currently playing his first professional gig, remember, obviously in Adelaide. Yes. And the chances to be surrounded by the doyons, you know, you're talking Gorgian, Ingles, Paddy, Deli, all of these players, it can only make him better. And I think it will expose him to an invaluable and more than anything off the court.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And that's where I think would be he needs to be at the training camps. He needs to make himself available for all of those things. Yes. But do I think he'll make the team? No, I don't.
Right.
And I don't think he will.
Yeah, well, then I think we're probably in agreement. So a lot of the noise is just about, you know, jumping on the Josh Giddey bandwagon. He's nominated for the draft. He's got triple doubles. You know, we're just going to jump on that bandwagon. Mm. But the reality is he ready for that step? And if he is, select him.
Yeah.
But if he's not, don't on some other ridiculous notion that, oh, you know, he needs to be blooded. That's a total nonsense to me. Yeah. Sitting there in the 12th spot, you know, when you've got no contribution to make, or that they don't see that at this particular time, you shouldn't be there. If they think you've got a contribution to make, different story.
Well, you heard it, everyone, from the man, BOTINAPY, bodynarge.com. He is the guru, the greatest writer, not just in Australia, in the world. His book's coming out soon. And, yes. Body, thanks for another great week, mate.
Absolute pleasure. Sean Dennis, I'm looking forward to who we got next week because, you know, these guests have been fabulous. Absolutely, they really have been fabulous.
Everyone, thank you for your feedback. We're loving all our viewers. You are absolutely fantastic. Again, thanks to Sean Dennis. And everyone, we'll see you next week. Mate, how good was that when he was talking about, you know, Al Green, I want to fight you and everything? That was just so good.
I know Al really well. And the person I know is nothing like the man that has white line fever. Yeah, white line fever.
I'm playing in Gold Coast and Wayne Larkins, right? And I'm coming off a screen and Wayne Larkins just cracks me straight in the mouth with his elbow and he said, there's more to come. The next play, he knocked me out from behind, right? But all I hear is he's the nicest bloke in the world. That's just the way they played in that era. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's just the way it was. What is on the court stays on the court, but I loved it.
Yeah, me too.